Hello and welcome to the South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Dr. Ronajoy Sen, a senior research fellow at the Institute. Today's topic is the Bihar elections. In the Bihar elections, the first to be held in India amidst the pandemic, and the results of which were announced on November 10th, the ruling NDA, or the National Democratic Alliance, won a narrow majority. The NDA comprising the BJP and the Janata Dal United, or the JDU, and a few smaller parties won 25 seats to 110 for the opposition Grand Alliance, or the Mahagathbandhan, of the Rashtriya Janata Dal, the RJD, the Congress, and three left parties. However, the overall difference in votes polled by the NDA and the opposition alliance was just 0.2%. And a mere 84,900 votes. The BJP won 74 seats, and Chief Minister Nitish Kumar's JDU won only 43. For the opposition alliance, the RJD, which became the party with the highest number of seats, won 75, while the Congress's tally was only 19 seats. The left parties made a comeback of sorts, winning 16 seats, with the CPI-ML alone winning 11. To discuss the Bihar elections and its implications, we have with us today Dr. Nilanjan Sarkar. Dr. Sarkar is a senior visiting fellow at the Center for Policy Research, CPR, and an assistant professor at Ashoka University. His research interests include the Indian political economy and comparative political behavior. His recent work has focused on state-level elections in India through both data work and ethnographic methods. Dr. Sarkar is also a non-resident fellow at the Center for the Advanced Study of India at the University of Pennsylvania. So my first question is, you know, one of the big takeaways from the Bihar elections was the poor performance of Nitish Kumar and the JDU. So what does this say about alliances and coalitions in the BJP system, as well as the role of regional leaders? Did the BJP follow the risky policy of deliberately cutting down Nitish to size through Chirag Pasvan's LJP or the Lok Jan Shakti Party? Or was the JDU's poor performance the result of other factors, such as voters attributing development benefits to the center, as you yourself have argued? On the flip side, did the RJD concede too much to the Congress by way of seats? I know this is probably three or four questions rolled into one, but I'd be very interested to hear a response, Nilanjan.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's fine to actually ask all of these big questions at once in the sense that all of the issues sort of run into each other. So first, let me give you sort of one big picture number, which was clear from your opening. But you know, the BJP contested 110 seats and had a 67% strike rate, right? So it won, you know, around 2/3 of its seats. The JDU only has a strike rate of 37%. So just a little more than a third of its seats that it contested it won.
Right.
We don't typically see these kinds of huge differences in alliance performance with two parties in the same alliance. It tells us something about the votes not transferring the right way. So, you know, to sort of break down what may have happened, I think it's useful to think a little bit about what role Nitish Kumar plays within the alliance. Within Bihar. So the first thing that I would say as the first piece of the puzzle, as you know, from a detective standpoint, is that post 2014, in 2014, Nitish and JDU went it alone. But even in 2015, when allied with RJD, in the 2019 national elections, the JDU has consistently been the weaker link among the alliance partners, winning less, you know, 3 to 5 percentage points less per contested seat than their main alliance partner. So we know that in the Modi era, Nitish has not been as powerful electorally, whereas that's not what we saw pre-Modi era. Mm. And so I have argued, as you suggested, that you know, there's something to think about in terms of what is happening to regional leaders and state leaders as Narendra Modi and Amit Shah are centralizing policy within, you know, the central leadership of the BJP and the center at the state level, right? The big thing to sort of think about here is that many of the welfare schemes and the welfare benefits that we associate with India, in India today, or the average Indian sort of thinks about, they attribute to Modi, And that's a big shift from what I saw in 2015 when I visited Bihar. And I spent a lot of time in Bihar studying studying the Bihar election, where the first, at the moment that someone received a scholarship or a pension, the first person they would think about is Nitish Kumar. So a phenomenon that we're starting to see in India is that when people are getting benefits, the first person they're attributing the benefit to is Modi and no longer their state level leader. And this is a huge shift from what we saw in the 2000s onwards, when a number of welfare chief ministers, many of them in the BJP like Shivraj Singh Chauhan, Raman Singh in Chhattisgarh, became, this sort of welfare chief minister model of high social spending became a powerful electoral tool. These are people who kept on winning elections. Not so surprisingly, if this mechanism is true, these are all leaders who have also lost in the Modi era. So what I'm trying to suggest here is that as we've seen greater centralization of policy, from the voter standpoint, we've also seen greater centralization of attribution of social benefits. That attribution is no longer going to state chief ministers, which is making them politically less desirable. So that's the first sort of larger question about why we might be seeing such a huge difference between Nitish Kumar and Narendra Modi. And I think we'll talk later about perhaps what the Modi effect might have been on these elections. But suffice to say, there was a sufficiently large difference between the two. Now, just one little bit of empirical evidence, and I think we can move on. And I'll also talk briefly about LJP here. So in the CSDS Lokniti pre-election survey, when people were asked upon whose work they will base their vote, so 16% of those responding said the Nitish Kumar government, the chief minister's government. 27% of those said the Modi government. So we know that there's some empirical evidence that people are looking to the Modi government. But the line, the data that's most surprising to me in that pre-election survey is that even among NDA supporters, remember that Nitish Kumar has been a chief minister for a very, very long time in Bihar. Even then, 33% of them said they would vote base their vote on Nitish's work, and 42% say they would base their vote on Modi's government, right? Which tells you that even among the NDA voters in Bihar, even with a long-serving chief minister, most NDA supporters are looking to work at the center to decide whether they should vote for the NDA in Bihar in a state election, which is an interesting flip. Now, I do think that Chirag Paswan saw that there was a political opportunity here. Now, whether or not the BJP put Chirag Paswan and the LJP up to this is anybody's guess. I don't know what internal communications are. What we do know for a fact, though, is that the LJP did do a lot of damage to the JDU in this election. So the LJP put up in 115 seats the JDU contested, the LJP put up separate candidates in 113 of them. In 51 of those 113 seats, they had more than a 10% vote share. And so if you just add the LJP and JDU vote shares, you can see a spoiler effect, which basically means JDU going from losing to winning in up to 34 seats. Now that would assume perfect vote transfer, it never happens. But even with about 50% vote transfer of LJP votes, we're looking at a more realistic 21 seats in which the LJP played spoiler. So the LJP did matter a lot. It proved its electoral significance to the alliance, even though it didn't win a lot of seats. So I think it has some bargaining power when it comes back with the NDA, but we should not lose sight of the fact that even controlling for the spoiler effect, the JDU performed quite weakly.
Any quick comments on the RJD Congress alliance and whether the Congress weighed down the Mahagathbandhan as is being conventionally argued?
So, what we obviously, the Congress has performed quite a bit weaker than the RJD in its seats. Its actual contested vote share is not dramatically different than JDU's actually. So, those were clearly the two parties that were not doing as well in their respective alliances. What I would say is that, the hope often with Congress because of certain demographic specialties and history of sort of winning seats, you hope that the Congress can, for instance, win the Simanchal area and so on and so forth. And that seems to have gotten away from the Magartanda. So there does seem to be some evidence that the Congress performed weaker. You know, elsewhere, I've also argued that it becomes hard for voters to vote for a party, even when we think about coalitions and vote transfers, if they can't associate the party with a strong leader, right? The BJP is somehow solving that problem because Modi is at the center, even if you don't have a strong state level leader. But you know, the Congress really does have that issue. It doesn't have a draw in the way that some of these other parties have. And perhaps that hurt it. I think we'll also have an opportunity to talk about Owaisi. I think that we're starting to see certain demographic changes in the electorate, which are also hurting the Congress. So I would agree the Congress was the weak link. I think it's a function of larger structural shifts, though, that are happening among voters and not just those within Bihar.
Right. You've already talked a little bit about the Modi factor, but to come back to, you know, how important the Modi factor was and the politics of Vishwas, trust, belief, as you've termed it, and did either Hindutva or national issues play a role at all in the Bihar election?
So, you know, I mean, we have one data point, you know, in Hindustan Times, which is, you know, a newspaper I also write with quite a bit when it comes to election analysis. You know, they just analyzed the districts in which Modi campaigned. And we do see about a 4-12 percentage point increase in strike rates in the last two phases in the districts in where Modi campaigned. Now, that's suggestive evidence. There are lots of reasons why that could have happened. Yeah. But when you look at the difference in strike rates, we look at the kinds of numbers that you know, the BJP put up in place where Modi campaigned, there's some suggestive evidence. Now, you know, what I would say is a larger question, you know, what is the Modi factor? You know, what role does something like Hindutva play in elections? I think that, you know, the way that I think about this problem, and we sort of, you can apply it to someone like Yogi Adityanath, so not even a national, not necessarily a national leader, is that this is a kind of politics that Modi plays and that Hindutva represents, which is not particularistic from a caste perspective, at least, right? It is anti-Muslim, potentially, right? But it is not, you know, sort of within Hinduism necessarily creating those kinds of divisions as a narrative.
Right.
And so it does create a challenge for, as we know, a lot of Bihar's politics has been particularistic, caste-specific in nature. It does create a challenge in terms of narrative for these parties. Now, that does not mean, by the way, that BJP's coalition, social coalition, and the NDA's social coalition isn't very caste-specific. Indeed, it is, and we know that. But it means that the narrative that is used is often not one of benefiting particular caste groups. And that, I think, helps it when it comes to sort of bringing together smaller caste groups into a larger coalition. You know, I think, you know, my friend and sort of careful watcher of Bihar, a guy named Sajjan Kumar, has argued that even though Nitish may not be the huge electoral force that, you know, many think, he plays a very important role because there are a group of what we call EBCs, extremely backward castes, right? Who are no longer devoted to the RJD. Mm-hmm. And they see in Nitish, you know, a leader in that they can support. Now, I think that's a very interesting way of thinking about this because Nitish's appeal is not seen as particularistic, but he does appeal to certain groups. And in a number of ways, the fact that Modi also represents that kind of character, just like I was talking about with sort of attribution of benefits, is also hurting Nitish's ability to sort of leverage this quality.
Right. That's an interesting take on you know, how Modi factor plays out in state elections as opposed to the national election. Mm. This was also the first election held, you know, after COVID-19 struck. So how would you characterize the impact of the pandemic, if at all, on the election result?
So, you know, the reality is, at least from a data standpoint, it's very, very difficult to understand these things. I think going in based on survey data, you wouldn't have thought that performance in the coronavirus pandemic would have much of a political impact. That being said, you know, we can take a slice the data in a few different ways. And I will just be very open and say that the data that we have is quite poor. The last sort of large out-migration data source that we have district across district is the 2001 census. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I looked at districts that are above the median level of migration and below the median level of migration, and just simply looked at how the NDA performed in each of them. Now, what we do see is that the NDA does perform more poorly in a high migration district areas. So for instance, the JDU's strike rate drops from 46% in lower migration districts to 27% in higher migration districts. Now, some of that is due to a dip in vote share for the NDA, but not so much. What is more prominent in the data is an increase of about 4 percentage points in the contested vote share for the RJD in these places. And I think part of what may have happened, you know, some of it is just demographic differences, but it is also the case that Tejasvi Yadav and the RJD built a campaign not just around caste disappeals and backward forward, but also around jobs right. and some of the economic distress that you know, took place during the lockdown and during the coronavirus pandemic. And perhaps that was a pull to some set of voters. So while we do see these kinds of differences in performance, you know, it's actually not paradoxically about punishment towards the BJP and JDU as much as it is about rewarding the RJD, again, you know, conditional on some set of demographic factors.
Right. Great. You've already touched a little bit on the, you know, the caste equations and how it played into the campaign as well as the results. So I'll skip that in the interest of time. One of the things that I wanted to briefly discuss with you is the high women turnout, which is one of the highlights of the election. How do you think that impacted the result?
So, you know, my sense has actually impacted the election quite a bit. We know that just as people who sort of look at elections, our sense based on survey data and our own interviews in the field is that both Narendra Modi and Nitish Kumar have fairly large advantages among female voters. Female voters do tend, in my experience, to vote for them. Now, in this case, they're both in coalition with each other, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have some evidence that suggests that indeed the NDA performed much better in places where women voted at a higher rate. So again, looking at sort of Hindustan Times data, in the lowest quintile, so among the bottom 20 percentile of the share of female voters, the BJP won about 25% of the seats in those areas. In the highest quintile, the top 20%, so the largest share of female voter areas, the NDA won 62% of the seats in those areas, right? Mm-hmm. So we see these huge differences. There's almost a monotonic relationship, actually, a monotonically increasing relationship between the share of female voters in this election and the seat share for the NDA. So it does seem, at least empirically, that there is evidence for this. You know, I do think, you know, this is an old argument in political economy circles, but, you know, the differences in gender and preferences when it comes to social delivery and particularly local delivery, I think really do bite here. And if we do believe that women have slightly different policy preferences when it comes to delivery, particularly to those who are able to deliver, then it's not a surprise that Modi and Nitish Kumar do as well as they do among female voters.
Right. Okay, so to move on to the next question. The left parties, which were part of the Grand Alliance with the Mahagath Bandhan, did remarkably well. Does that, in your opinion, signal a left resurgent, or would you say it's very context specific? Because Bihar is a place where the left has had long pockets of influence historically.
You know, I mean, I think it is a very interesting development. We obviously cannot rule out the impact of being a part of a larger coalition in which they're able to get a nice transfer of votes. But let's just sort of say, you know, if you just look at the map, I think what is most extraordinary about the left's performance here has a fairly high strike rate, right? You know, a little under 2/3. Its spatial spread is actually quite great, right? It's not like they just sort of dominated seats in one area. And their strike rates are reasonably good across a number of regions. And so one starts wondering, you know, what is it about the left? Now, I would agree that as a national force, there's a long way to go, especially given the decline of left politics recently. But we know that historically in the East, not just in Bengal, but obviously in West Bengal as well, you know, the left has been quite prominent. And so there is, you know, an opportunity perhaps for the left to make some ground up. So let me just sort of maybe go through one or two things that I noted about the left's performance here. First, I don't think it's as simple as saying, well, you were in a winning coalition, you were in a strong coalition that almost won the election, so therefore you did much better, because that argument should apply to Congress as well. And clearly the Congress did not perform as well within the Magadha Bandhan.
Yeah.
I think what we're sort of seeing with left politics in this time is that in some sense, they are the most able to make the kinds of arguments that Tejasvi Yadav was trying to make about economic distress, about the lack of jobs, about social protection, without some of the caste baggage that as a Yadav party, the RJD has.
Right.
So I do think that in this time of economic deprivation, we are actually looking at a fair amount of salience, at least for many of the issues the left brings up. So that I think may have been one of the things that mattered in the kinds of results that we saw. Now, in terms of whether this can spread, you know, I think that that is a little more challenging, right? You know, it requires at least some belief that the left can plausibly gain power in some of these states, but it does tell us anyway that, you know, there is some salience to left politics. And I think the last piece of evidence that I would give about this, right, is that in this era of BJP electoral and political dominance, the only kind of jibes that we have seen that have really riled up the BJP and gotten them to change tack are those that are actually explicitly class-based, like Surput Ki Sarkar.
Right.
That is when Modi sort of transformed himself as a welfarist, right? In the beginning in 2014, you'll remember that he was not seen that way.
Yeah.
And so paradoxically, the counterpoint to moving away from particularistic politics, as I mentioned earlier, is exactly this kind of model of class politics, right? That actually is sort of a critique of perhaps what BJP represents in a larger political sense.
Right. Okay, I think we are running out of time. So this is the final question. You know, the performance of Asaduddin Owaisi's AIMIM, which won 5 seats, was noteworthy. Is that likely to have an impact both on national politics as well as particularly for the coming West Bengal elections, which are scheduled for next year, early next year?
So, you know, Owaisi has become a stronger political force, I think, particularly in the era of, the CAA, National Register, and the NRC politics and the movement against it, right? He's become a serious figure as trying to build some Muslim political unity across India. Now, historically, we've not seen that kind of political unity. Right. And so it's hard to sort of say that that Owaisi and the AIMIM will be able to spread. About West Bengal more specifically, you know, Shoaib Daniel has written about this recently, applying an argument from Kanchan Chandra. But basically his argument, and one that I'm sympathetic to, is that West Bengal is a very different case because our experience empirically is that Muslim communities have been involved in the ruling coalitions, right, and are involved in state politics and state patronage. And B, even in places where there's a potential for splitting of the Muslim vote, say between Congress and TMC, we have broadly seen fairly good coordination to prevent splitting within the community, for instance, in South Bengal and so on and so forth, right? So so it'll be a harder road, I think, for Owaisi to make those kinds of inroads into West Bengal. Now, that being said, I think there's a huge caveat here, and it's I think it's something that none of us know, which is that, you know, when it comes to these upcoming elections in Assam, West Bengal, Tamil Nadu, and Kerala all go to the polls together. We expect that CAA and NRC will become a much bigger deal and will be brought up again as a major political issue. Right. Now, that is going to necessarily rile up the political discourse. We do not know how the politics of BJP and the politics of Owaisi perform in that setting. And I think that's the big question mark we have. As of right now, I don't think that Owaisi has much of a chance in a place like West Bengal. But, you know, that's subject to a certain kind of politics not rearing its head, which we expect that it will.
I guess we could have gone on, but in the interest of time, we'll have to call an end to a very interesting discussion. Thank you, Dr. Sarkar, for taking the time to chat with us and for lucidly analyzing the Bihar election. You were listening to South Asia Chat. If you wish to learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. Thank you once again, Nilanjan.
Thank you.